Well, we've already heard the gospel tonight in song. And it's beautiful. That's good news. I thought when Bill was leading, were you there when they crucified my Lord? I thought he'll sing a verse also that proclaims his resurrection. Sure enough, he did, because the death isn't the last. That's not the end of it. And he's here with us tonight. Last Sunday evening, we noticed an aspect of the life of Jesus. We called him Jesus the Great Storyteller. We talked about so many of the stories that he told. One of the stories he told, to which I alluded but we didn't elaborate, was the story about some children playing. And the story went like this. He asks this question, "What shall I compare this generation to?" It's like children sitting in the marketplaces calling to their playmates, "We piped to you and you didn't dance. We wailed to you and you didn't mourn." That very brief story about children playing funeral and wedding. And children do things like that now. They still play church and they play wedding and they play different games. Jesus had noticed these in the common everyday life of the child of Palestine, and he told them, this generation is like that. The reason why he told it, though, introduces us to another aspect of his life, and that being his social life, the social aspect of his life. Jesus was a social mixer. His calendar, it seemed, was always full. He was always going home with somebody to eat, or sitting down with someone to talk to them, or going out in search of someone who needed some fellowship, or taking his disciples alone by themselves for some rest and some communion with their master. Jesus was a man who was a social mixer. The difference between John and Jesus, he goes on and says, was the fact that John was an ascetic and Jesus was the opposite, if there was an opposite ever. Jesus was an opposite of John. He told this story to illustrate the difference between himself and John the Baptizer. He said, "This generation grumbles at both of us. They don't like either John or me." He said, "John came neither eating nor drinking, and you say he has a demon." He said, "The Son of Man came both eating and drinking, and you say a glutton and a wine bibber or a drunkard." He said, "You can't be satisfied." But he highlights the fact that he was a social person, a sociable person. Respectable society looked down upon Jesus because of the liberality of his associations. Jesus associated with anybody and everybody. He fraternized with all kinds and classes. The powerful, the weak, the rich, the poor, the despised Samaritan, the Roman legionnaire, the Greek, the learned philosophers of his day, the rabbis, the scribes, the Pharisees, the ignorant fishermen, men and women, tax grafters, lepers, adulterers, children. He's what George Cornell says, he had a yen for people. I've often commented that one of the most outstanding qualities of Jesus was this seemingly boundless ability to open his arms and just receive people to himself. He had the ability to go into any situation and without seizing it, the initiative seemed to always come to him and he became the host even in the homes of other people. It turned out that he was the host. I don't know why. It seems like that. That's not true every time, but he was always, of course, the center of attention, and yet he didn't draw attention to himself intentionally. It was just the way that he was. There's no clearer picture of the way that he associated with all different kinds of people than we have in the story of the call of Matthew Levi. And this is prefaced by two or three interesting things. Jesus had been across the province of Gadarene, and he had been associating with someone there that nobody else would associate with. He sat and talked with this man who had been the demoniac of the whole area. He was the wild man. Matthew says there were two of them. And he was there sitting and talking with this man or these men, and he asked him a question, "What is your name?" Can you imagine sitting and talking with a wild man just calmly? And this is the man that couldn't be bound. He would be bound with chains. He just flexed his muscles and popped the chains and popped the cords or whatever it was that was binding him. And he was out cutting himself with stones and moaning and groaning. He lived out among the tombs. Jesus went there, got out of the boat. The man ran to him and said some things. And then Jesus said, "What is your name?" The man said, "Legion." And Jesus commanded those demons to come out of the man. We'll discuss it later in a different context, but then after a very strange event, they asked him to leave their country. So he did. He got back in the boat, went back over to Capernaum. Matthew says he went back over to his own city. He had already moved to Capernaum by that time. Mark records that he went home. Mark says that whenever the people heard that he was at home, which implies that Jesus at this particular part of his life was living in a place that someone provided for him, probably. I doubt that he had the money to buy it. But nevertheless, he was in a house that was called home. And we'll notice this later in a different context also. But after a strange and beautiful event that took place in his own house there, he left his house and was on his way and passed along the business part of the city of Capernaum and went by the office of a man by the name of Matthew. And he said, "Follow me." Matthew closed up shop. He was a tax collector, an accountant perhaps also, you know, and all that goes with the business world. And he just closed up shop and went along with Jesus. And then as they went along, he gathered up a whole group of his cronies, and they went to Matthew's house, and Matthew gave him a party. And this man, George Cornell, in a very beautiful description of that in a book called Behold the Man, and in a description of it, listen as he describes beautifully this event. A rough and disreputable crew reclined around the low semicircular table at the house in Capernaum. Swag-bellied vendors, sailors, fish picklers, camel drivers, crooked tax collectors, and brawling stevedores from the city wharfs. With lusty relish, they fed on broad, fresh mullet, dipping hot bread into the bowls of olive sauce and corn porridge, munching the spiced leeks and onions, washing it down with wine. Among them, cultivating their company, was Jesus. Toward the doorway, beyond the row of hanging lamps, stood a shadowy cluster of spectators who had wandered into the open court to watch, as often occurred. They whispered among themselves, "Extortioners, devil's spawn." Two of Jesus' men, themselves brawny fishermen, edged over to the group. A sternly pious scholar demanded, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" Jesus heard it, and he and the others paused in their meal. He looked about at them thoughtfully. Indeed, they were a wayward lot, unstable, scorned, and they knew it, without pretense. Deliberatively, he wiped his mouth with a towel and turned toward the chastisers beyond the smoky light and said, "Those who are well have no need of a physician." He quoted from the prophet Hosea, I desire mercy and not sacrifice. And he added, you go and learn what this means. I came not to call the righteous, but sinners. Only the most thoroughly smug would have missed the irony. It caused him trouble. Right after the feast, some of the disciples of John even came up to his disciples and said, why is it that your teacher, and why is it rather that the Pharisees fast and John's disciples fast, but you and your teacher don't fast? Now, they had noticed that Jesus and his disciples, it just wasn't in their pattern to fast. They were feasting. Jesus overheard it and said, how can the friends of the bridegroom fast as long as he's with them? And he pictured the atmosphere of his own company as being the festive, joyful atmosphere of a group of people at a wedding feast. Now, he said, the time is coming when the bridegroom will be taken away from them, and then they'll fast. But he went beyond that and said, this is a new kind of life. And says, fasting for you, in a sense, was just a religious tradition. He said, the time will come, and is now, he really was saying, that the time is when fasting will only be occasioned by times of real mourning. He said, you don't sew an unshrunk piece of cloth onto an old garment. You don't put new wine into old wineskins. He was simply saying, you've got to be aware that something new is happening. And don't try to measure it in the weights of those old customs. A new life is here. Well, so much of his life and so much of his teachings were colored by this social bent of his, this yen for people. The first miracle he ever performed was at a wedding feast. John 2. The last scene that we have in John's gospel pictures him around a breakfast table, although it wasn't a table, it was just an open fire of charcoal and fish and hush puppies, but there he was. He fixed it himself, fed his disciples, and told them, come on, let's eat breakfast. And they did. They sat down and ate breakfast. In that misty morning by the Sea of Galilee, he chose to associate with them around the table. And the parables are galore that are built around the social format, built around the table. Jesus said there, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who made a marriage feast for his son. And I didn't take time to count the number of times that he said the kingdom of heaven is like a feast that someone made for somebody. And then the immortal parable of the prodigal son, the playing of the music and the dancing and the merriment that was heard by the elder brother who said, what is that noise? And the servant said, your brother's home. And your dad has killed the fatted calf, and we're having a party. Come on in. But old Sourpuss wouldn't. But the father loved this boy. And he made a feast for him. And with excitement, he called for a new robe, for new ring, new shoes, killed the fatted calf. He called out the orchestra, he called out the servants, and they just threw this tremendous spread, and they were going at it strong. That's the parable, and that's the way the Lord thought. Well, when and with whom would he associate in such ways? And I just simply maintain it was whenever and whomever. At the drop of a hat, and he would drop the hat. If you just give him a half a chance, he'd drop the hat and he'd have a party with you and he'd go home and eat with you whenever and with whomever. Many times it was on Saturday, on the Sabbath day. And as you read through the Gospels, you get the impression that this was with religious people. And we don't do anything different much today because in little country congregations and all, when do you go home with people to eat? Well, you go home with them after church. And that's what happened here. After the synagogue service, Luke, the 14th chapter, says that Jesus went home with one of the rulers, which meant one of the rulers of the synagogue, who was a Pharisee, and he went home with him to eat. That's Luke, the 14th chapter. And we won't take time to turn to all of these, But on that Sabbath, when he went to dine at the house of the ruler who belonged to the Pharisees, they were watching him, and they wanted to see if he would heal on the Sabbath. But anyway, he went home to eat. And it seems that usually these occasions on the Sabbath day after church were with religious people, because you see, Jesus, he was always in the synagogue on the Sabbath. That was his custom. He was as regular there as you could ever expect. It was his custom. It was his whole life. He'd been brought up going to church on Saturday. And they took advantage of it and said to him on so many occasions, I didn't take the time to find them all, but they're all through there. Come on home and have lunch with me. And so they would do that. Other parties took place at other times. One memorable event was in the house of Simon the Pharisee. This doesn't indicate that it was on Saturday, but he went home with this man who really, though he was outwardly hospitable, he was inwardly hostile. And it actually showed up outwardly also. He went in and was reclining the way they did. They would recline around a table and would lean on one elbow and would eat with either hand or whatever, but they would lean on an elbow. And they were so totally relaxed, it was a sociable event, a social event. And while he was there with his feet stretched out behind him, there came a woman into the room, and she knelt down at his feet and began to cry, mourning over her life, weeping. And she had some ointment, and she poured this over his feet and washed his feet and anointed it and kissed them. Strange event. Old Simon said, uh-huh, that settles it as far as I'm concerned. If this man were a prophet, he would have known who and what sort of woman this is, because she's a sinner. Jesus read that fellow's mind. And he said, Simon, I have something I want to say to you. He said, what is it? And he told him another story. He said, once there was a man that had two debtors. One owed him 50 shekels and the other owed him 500. Since neither of them had the money to pay, he forgave them both. Which one of the two will love him the more? Simon said, I suppose the one to whom he forgave the more. Jesus said, you've answered right. He said, you see this woman? When I came into your house, you didn't wash my feet. You didn't anoint my head. You gave me no kiss. But from the time that I have been in here, she has not ceased to wash my feet with her tears, wipe them with her hair, to anoint my feet, and has not ceased kissing my feet. Her sins, which are many, are forgiven. For he that loves much is forgiven much. He that loves little is forgiven little. And Simon got the contrast. Perhaps we saw that very contrast this morning. Frankly, Brother Burke, I don't want to be in the other group. Jesus is the friend of publicans and sinners. Well, there was a party one time in the home of Zacchaeus. I've told you this story. I've told you these stories so many times, but I don't get tired of telling because I don't think you get tired of hearing them. Zacchaeus, it was about the last 10 days of the life of Jesus, not more than 2 weeks before he was crucified, at the most. He was on his way from the little hideout across the Jordan, where he had been a refugee and had been hiding. And he came into the city of Jericho, came on down probably Main Street, this procession. There Zacchaeus was up in the tree because he couldn't see him. Jesus could have ignored him. He could have ripped him up and down for being a thief and for stealing the money from the people and the taxes. But he looked up there and saw this man estranged from society, a social outcast, a reprobate, a thief, a robber. And he said, Zacchaeus, come down quick. come down quickly. I'm going home with you today. And the man just literally fell out of the tree. It says he hastened. He came down quickly and received him joyfully. Joyfully. Why? Oh, many reasons. It had been so long since he had had someone who was respectable show him any respect. It had been so long since anybody who was anybody counted him as somebody. And we can't understand how they treated those traitors, those Jewish brethren who turned their back on the Jewish countrymen and robbed them for Rome. We can't understand the hatred that they had for them. Sure enough, when he went into the home of Zacchaeus, the respectable Jews said, "Look at him. Look, he's going into the home of a sinner." And they were eating and enjoying the hospitality of this man. And it so touched the man that he stood up and said, "Lord, I'm going to give half of what I have to the poor. And if I have taken anything wrongfully, I'm going to restore it fourfold." Jesus said, "Today salvation has come to this house." He was just simply a friend to everybody. There were those special relaxed times, intimate times. Do you know which house of all the homes in, of all of his acquaintances, do you know which one he felt the most at ease in? You do, don't you? Where was it? It was in Bethany. Who was it? Old Lazarus and lovely Mary and practical Martha. That's where he could take off his shoes. And after a hard day of battle with the Pharisees and those that were out to get him, he could go home just shortly over the hill. You know, he just knew that there was that door was always open. And he repaired there from time to time just to get away from the crowd who were pressing upon him. And he would go there and take his shoes off and just relax and associate with some home folks that he could really feel at home with. On one occasion, as you know, he was there and Martha was in a tizzy. Oh, she was busy with much preparation. Mary, as usual, and all the way through the Gospels, the qualities and characteristics and personalities of these two girls is uniformly told. Every time Martha is serving and Mary is sitting there enjoying the Lord. Not an exception. This one wasn't one either. And Mary was sitting there listening to Jesus, and Martha was busy going around in a hubbub trying to get everything ready. And she said, she came in, you know, she had looked probably in there and tried to get Mary's attention. And she'd get the bread fixed, and then she'd look in there, and there Mary was, just still listening. And I don't doubt but what she waited until her patience were just finally, they snapped. And she came in and she said, "Lord, don't you care that Mary has left me to do all the serving? Then tell her to come here and help me." And then listen to Jesus soothe Martha. "Oh," she said, "Martha, Martha, don't worry so much about all this food." He said just one or two things is enough. "Don't worry about all this. Mary's chosen the good part, and it's not going to be taken away from her." He didn't even let things like that upset the associations that he had. There were those times like that, which says really it's not the food that he was so much after, it was the fellowship. And this is borne out in John the 4th chapter when he was satisfied with just a cup of water. His disciples had gone into the city to buy something to eat, and he was sitting there, and the woman, the disreputable one, came with her pot for water, and she was there dipping the water out, and he asked for a drink out of her Samaritan cup, which was unheard of for a Jew to drink after a Samaritan. And he asked it from a woman, which was unheard of for a Jew man to ask of a Samaritan
woman and even to talk with her, but he didn't care. He crossed barriers. He jumped fences to be with people, and he was satisfied with just a cup of water. His disciples came back and said, Master, eat. He said, I'm not hungry. Here was an occasion when he didn't eat. He had a higher hunger that had been satisfied. He said, my food is to do the will of him that sent me. And he was looking at the people as he was talking. He said, my food is to do the will of him that sent me. Look, he said, you see, he said, I thought you would say, are they not yet 4 months and then comes the harvest? He says, look there. Look a coming. There comes the harvest. It's already white. Because the woman had gone back into the city, you see, and had told them. She said, come quick. I've met a man that has told me everything I ever did. Why, he didn't. He told her a good bit of it. She'd had 5 husbands. That occupies some time. The man she's living with now wasn't her husband. It may have been all what she had specialized in, perhaps, all of her life, maybe. And then, not just that occasion, but on other occasions, whenever people brought him little children, the disciples said, get those children, get them away. And, you know, and it says, and Mark's account of it is more colorful than Matthew's. Matthew just says he's told them, don't forbid the children, let them come to me. But Mark's account says Jesus was indignant. Oh, that's a strong word. He was indignant that they would think of stopping little children from coming to him. And Mark says that he picked them up in his arms and blessed them and laid his hands on them. He just was with people. Amazing character, wasn't he? Isn't he? He's as alive today, more so than you or I. He can go wherever he wants. He doesn't have to open doors. He eats with all of us in our homes. You know, just because he went back to his father doesn't mean that he stopped associating with people in meals or times of fellowship. There's just something about eating together, though, that it implies acceptance. And he even had a philosophy about eating. He told about when you go to a feast, he said, don't sit down in the chief seat. Somebody more honorable than you is going to come in, and the man that invited both of you is going to come and say to you, "Would you come, if you will, and let this man sit here. He's more honorable than you, and you're going to be embarrassed, and you're going to be with shame making your way down here to the lowest seat." He said, rather, when you go to a feast, just sit down here at the lowest seat, and then when the man that invited you comes, he's going to say, what are you doing here? You come on up here. And then he said, you're going to have honor. He would stop to take the time to tell you about how to get along with other people. But then he said, now when you give a feast, don't invite the rich or your kinfolks or the neighbors that can invite you back. He said, when you have a feast or give one, invite the poor and the lame and the blind and the halt. Then your reward will be great. That implies acceptance. And it really touches on what he was all about anyway. Jesus was a mixer because he wanted people to know they were loved. And he had this ability to love the unlovely and to cause them to do just like pouring fertilizer around a plant. People just would just blossom in his presence. People who are accepted do that. It's only through rejection that we cause people to be stunted and grow, and their growth stunted. Jesus, though, because of his magnanimous character and his open fellowship with people who of all branches and all classes and all of everything, they just bloomed. They just sprung up all over the place. and went away to a higher life because of the way that he called them to that, because he accepted them. Well, there are so many things you could say about Jesus as a mixer and eating together with people. But this thing of eating together with people is found even among important things that, you know, you'd think, well, surely it's time now to quit this eating and partying and all of it. It wasn't the Last Supper. It is, of course, set in the context of a supper. And then his appearance to the two men on the road to Emmaus, they recognized him in Emmaus while they were sitting there around the table eating. Jesus broke bread and they recognized who he was. When he met with his disciples behind closed doors, he asked, "Do you have anything to eat?" in order to give them evidence of his resurrection. Then, as I said, the last time that John refers to him in John's gospel, he was preparing breakfast and had provided it for these disciples of his. We need not think he stopped when he went back to his Father. His spirit still dwells in his body. If we're his body, as the people in the first century were, then we'll have all things together in common, and we'll be in each other's homes as they were. They went to the temple together to worship, just like we're here tonight, and it says that they broke bread at home with each other. And they took their food with glad and generous hearts, sharing with each other. And they had favor with all the people. And the Lord added to them daily such as were being saved. What a beautiful picture of the continuation of the life of the Lord. And you know, just because time is going to cease one day, that doesn't mean that Jesus is going to change or that the nature of his blood is going to change in the sense of his personality. When time is no more, John describes that great reunion in the sky. He describes it as a wedding feast. Blessed are those that are invited to the wedding supper of the Lamb. And so we see this beautiful characteristic of Jesus as a mixer, as a person who was unlimited in his ability to receive people to himself, as one who had this yen for folks, because he just loved people. He accepted people as they were. I wonder if we have the Spirit of Jesus in these aspects. Do we have the Spirit of Christ as we look out and see people who are hungering and hurting and who need acceptance and who need social recognition? Do we gravitate toward those people and invite them to be in our home? Or do we gravitate toward those who are already socially accepted and they don't need any real expression of acceptance? They know they're accepted. Oh, brethren, if we can just ever break down that barrier between us and those that are perhaps unknown or unloved and make that bridge between ourselves and them and just say to them, come on home, we want you to eat with us tonight. Don't have much, just got crackers and bologna, but we want you to eat with us. Oh, there's such a dynamic in that. He's our example. Let's not let him slip by now and without our seeing this and taking advantage of it. We could all go home with somebody tonight. Right now, we could all go home with everyone. We could eat at half as many tables right here tonight if we could ever get it worked out. The West End could eat with the East End. You know, that would be good. There are more of you all, so we'll go with you. What's our invitation hymn? 213. What's the name of it? Softly and tenderly, Jesus is calling. Come home. There's just a ring about that, too. Would you stand and let's sing to encourage each other?